97.1 The Point, number one for classic rock. Well, well, well. Today we have a guest who's someone who should be no stranger to you, Vegas. He is a very dear, longtime friend, the amazing creative genius, musical director, the star of Reckless in Vegas, which, by the way, has their 10th anniversary coming up, October 19th, Ali Ante Show. Please welcome Michael Shapiro. Hey, Michael.
Hi, Lark. How are you?
We're doing good. I'm so excited about this upcoming show. You know, what I was thinking on the drive over here was how far back I go with the whole evolution of this. And I remember you called me from San Rafael, California.
Yeah.
And you said, yeah, I have this idea. Just follow me. Let me explain it to you. And I had never heard of anything like what you were doing, of this idea for Reckless in Vegas. Do you want to run that by the audience here?
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
How many years ago? 12 years ago? Something?
I think that phone conversation you're referring to was around 2011, 2012. Yeah, because we released the album in 2012, so it was probably 2011. We were doing original music. We put out a couple of EPs and toured, and regional touring around California and the West Coast and a little bit toward the Rockies. And I got kind of tired of not making a living with the originals. And we were going to do a Johnny Cash tribute because my booking agent suggested tribute acts where the money's at. And Mario Cipollina from Huey Lewis and the News and on bass and Ryan Lowe on drums. And they were like, yeah, let's do it. And 2 weeks into learning the songs, I called Mario. I go, hey, man, I'm not going to be fulfilled doing this. You know, we'll make money, but I don't think I'm going to be happy. And he agreed. And so 2 weeks later, I was meditating, and I got this vision for Reckless in Vegas. And I was playing our kind of music in the vision. And I was wearing a sharkskin suit, and there were, like, showgirl dancers. And there was black and white video montages of old Vegas. And I was singing the Frank Sinatra song. And I came out of the meditation, and I wrote it all down, and I called a producer that I'd worked with on the first EP, who created a remake of Neil Diamond's Solitary Man for me. And I called Dan. I said, Dan, you remember that thing you did with the Neil Diamond song? He said, yeah. I go, what do you think about doing that with old Vegas music? And we spent about a year, and we put an album out, and it was a smash. So it came from a very pure spiritual place. And it manifested, and we did the work, and it was a smash in the Bay Area. And then in 2014, you know, we did our first 5-week residency at the Downtown Grand with Seth Shorey. He brought us to Vegas, and after the residency, I thought, I got to move back to Vegas. So I moved back April of 2015, and here we are, you know. So I shared that with you very early on, and I think I bounced it off of you because you and I go back to the 90s, and I trust you, and I think you gave me a little fuel to, yeah, that could be the right track. Go for it, right? So thank you for that, Lark.
It was so amazing to hear the concept, because I've always said what a visionary you are. You just get these incredible downloads of the entirety of it, which you did there, of how the show that you had not even conceived of was going to happen. And you sent me the CD and then said, well, we'll talk after you hear it. And when I heard the way that you took these old Vegas songs, rocked them out, and it was just brilliant. And I remember I said, I have an idea. And her name is Judy Alberti.
That's right.
Right? And I remember you did the debut at the Red Rock. That was the first time I had actually seen it. And that was from the musicians that you had in the Bay Area, right?
That preceded the residency that we got. That was when we were you're right. You know, I actually forgot that. And you did connect us with I think it was the first debut show of this music and this concept in Las Vegas. Oh, I owe you more credit than I give you, than I've given you. Okay, I got to rewrite that part because, yes, you actually got it played here.
Yeah, I got you here.
That's right.
Because I believed in you so much. I knew it was a great concept, but I knew that it wasn't something, if people sometimes can't think out of the box like you and I do. And it's a difficult pitch sometimes, unless you have a powerhouse like Judy Alberti behind you, who was still at Station Casinos at the time. She got it right away, remember? She just embraced it. And then, of course, you know, it's the magic of you. You're just such an incredible person, along with the talent that you have. But I'll never forget that show there with all of the family, and we were just, it was standing ovation. It was just an incredible, incredible show.
I remember being very nervous, you know, because when you have a friend like you and you put your neck out on the line and you give us an opportunity. But I do remember being very intensely nervous about walking out in that room. And I remember the show going well, and I remember it being a good presentation, but I'll never forget. There's just certain shows where you're extra, it just freaked out about it. I think I was really freaked out about that one. Thank you for doing that and taking a risk on us, Lark.
Of course, always. Yeah. Well, you know, as my girlfriend calls you, my girlfriend Debbie, Hollywood handsome, Michael Shapiro, which, you are Swayman De Buener.
Slipping, Lark.
You did not show it. You were the king of cool. And now you look at the evolution that this show has gone through and the versions of it that there are and the multiple venues that you've played. It's just amazing. And to anyone who has not seen Reckless in Vegas, it is a must-see, especially for those of us, like, Michael's the real deal. Michael is, when you think of vintage Vegas, and a guy who's got family history here, I mean, back to the Rat Pack days and beyond. He grew up in this. As I came here from California at the age of 8, one of my first girlfriends in the 4th or 5th grade was Ava Minsky. Her dad was Minsky Follies. Yeah. In fact, I have an Ava Minsky story. She saw a picture I posted from the Sahara show with your dad. She blew my phone up going, I was in love with Lenny Shapiro when I was in high school. So your dad, I had a conversation with him about what's the deal. And then, when I grew up here, Kathy Rich was the girl I spent the night at her house. I had no idea who her dad was. She was just a girl I went to school with. That's how it was back then. There were so many people that were either sons and daughters and kids of performers on the strip or sons and daughters of guys who ran the casinos. And it was a really eclectic, different 24-hour environment for kids to grow up here. But I remember when I came home one time and asked my mom if I could spend the night. Oh, no, I said, Kathy Rich's dad, I just have to ask permission. Can I go to work with him tonight and I'll spend the night at Kathy's? And my mom was like, why would you need to be dressed up and going out at night?
Because it's Buddy Rich, that's why.
And so I go over, my mom had every Frank Sinatra album. She had all kind of music across all genres. I was raised in a very musical family. I went over to the Frank Sinatra album with him in the hat, the fedora, and I go, well, he plays with that guy. And my mom lost her mind.
Crazy.
And it was that night I met Frank Sinatra. We hung out backstage. I was up till 4 in the morning and I said, I like this. 12 years old.
Did you come to any of the shows? I know you came to shows at the Sahara when we were in residency, but did you come ever when Kathy's son, Nick Rich, was playing drums with us?
I came specifically because she was in town and to see him, and he just channels Buddy Rich.
Crazy, right? It was it was so fun to play with him because, it was like the closest you're going to get to playing with the Buddy Rich, and he's a incredible musician. Just really, really an honor for me to share the stage with him.
And that's the Vegas history. And I'll tell you another thing I've always loved about Reckless in Vegas is the artists that you bring in, like my dear friend who also shares a birthday with you, Miss Kelly Clinton.
Yeah.
And Nikki Scalarja and all of the artists that you've brought in as guests in the show makes it even more special because it's all that vintage Vegas vibe, right?
I've learned that you surround yourself with people that are way better than you, and it makes you look better. And the thing is those artists, Ann Martinez, Nikki Scalera, Kelly Vaughn, Kelly Clinton-Holmes, I mean, the list goes on and on. Christine Shabak.
Yeah.
They elevate everything. And I've always been the kind of person to share that, and it takes the heat off of me for a little bit. And I get to see, I learn so much from sharing the stage with talent like that. And I always leave as a better artist, and there's no shortage of talent in this town. That's for sure.
That's absolutely correct. And I love all the versions of Reckless in Vegas, whether it's an acoustic version, the first version I saw at the Red Rock, or when you got the full blown, the screens and the horn section. And it's just, they all stand in their own right. And let's talk about this upcoming October 19th show. So 10th anniversary, what are we doing?
We're doing the full show. I want to, you know, celebrate it like how I envisioned it from the beginning and how we grew it too, and how we performed it, headlining it on the Strip. And it's going to have the horn section, and it's going to have the dancers, and of course we're going to bring in the video wall. That's a beautiful showroom, but it does not have a video wall, which is interesting. So we're going to bring our wall in and just celebrate it. You know, the true homage to what built this great city. That's been the mission statement, and then doing it our way, right? So a little more energy, a little more rocking. It's going to be a good night. I've got Stephanie Calvert. She, you know Stephanie?
I don't know her personally. No.
She was with Mickey Thomas's Starship for a while.
Oh, I do know her. Yes, I do. Okay. Didn't hit me. Yes. She's incredible.
And then Mark O'Toole will be a male guest, and then I've got a gentleman that's going to play guitar on, you know, the song I dance with Jolay on Can't Take My Eyes Off You.
Yes.
I don't play guitar on that song, and so Alex Domotsky, I think his last name is, he's going to play guitar. So we've got special guests, and it's just going to be a celebration of, wow, look at the art brought me back to Vegas. The art has sustained me for the last 10 years. I'm so, so grateful to the Las Vegas community and even our tourist market that came in and supported us on the Strip. And I just want to give back and be, it's just going to be a really wonderful night. And I don't know what I'm going to do after that. I don't know. We'll see.
Well, all of the venues that you've performed at have just been special. I remember seeing a show out there. In fact, Tom Fletcher was doing your sound at Aliante Station. It's a lovely, beautiful venue. And let's go back to that piece in the show with Jolay, your beautiful, lovely wife, who's so incredible. I cringed the first time I saw that. I went, I don't remember this being in Michael's wheelhouse. This
dancing, you mean?
And I went, is he going to drop his wife?
Oh,
I was nervous, so nervous when I first saw that. I went, I don't know from this.
She's giving me dirty looks half the time through that when I dance with her, because I am not a dancer. And I remember when we hired Alex Yankovich, I think she's in the Cirque du Soleil shows, and she came and she created the choreography for that number. And I'm like, I can't do this. And they're like, Jolay is the professional dancer. You're just going to be the centerpiece. You don't have to do anything crazy. But like, there's these moves that I'm just like, I don't know how it worked out, but I struggle every single time we perform it. It's just not my thing. You know what I mean? You take the guitar in front of me makes me feel safe. It's what I've done my whole life. And then you take the guitar off. Okay, now here I am naked, and I'm having to then support this amazing dancer. But she's supporting me. She's
the lead. She's definitely the lead on that.
100%.
But it's a beautiful moment. And knowing the love between the two of you, it is so special to see that piece. I'm so glad that you conquered your fear of, I can't drop my wife. It's up to me to just hold her back right here and do this. And it's a gorgeous, really special moment in this show.
It's a gift to do it with her. You know, when I first met her, I asked her out because she's just made my heart go nuts. And she said, no, you're too old for me. And she had a 5-year rule. And I said, okay. And then so then I convinced her to do the choreography, the early on choreography, and then be one of the dancers in the show and help me hire the other dancers. And so I got to work with her for a few months. And I slowly, quietly, covertly worked on her. She finally... I won her over, and we just celebrated 6 years of marriage, and we've been together 9 years, and she's just an amazing human being. And to be able to perform with her and be on stage with her and do this dream together has been such a bonus, you know. It really, yeah.
Well, you can see it. You can feel that energy. You just wore her down. You were like Chappie with a bone or the towel in his mouth. No, I'm not giving up. She'll like me eventually. I'll get this.
I truly turned it up. Like I just wanted to be her friend. Like if that was all it was going to be, I was grateful to be in her orbit, and I didn't go chase her, and I didn't try to pour it all on. I heard what she said, and she set a boundary, and I honored the boundary, and let her find her own wisdom with it. That has not been my MO, being a young man in Vegas early on playing in bands. You know, if I saw a woman I wanted to know, I made sure I knew her. And it didn't always work out, but like I didn't put the square peg in the round hole with her. You know, I just was patient, and And it worked out organically. Well, and
yes,
here we
did.
Are, right?
The
yeah.
Michael Shapiro charm eventually won.
She didn't buy the charm. She didn't buy the charm. She got the other part of me. Yeah, well, I can't impress her anymore. I used to be able to impress, you know, people with guitar riffs and, you know, and
she's not having it.
No, she wants that inside heart. She wants to be sure that the integrity is there. She's more about compassion and empathy and kindness. And she's taught me a lot. Yeah, she's
well,
taught me a lot.
You have come a long way, my friend. And you know, I go way, way back with you. We've all overcome a lot of challenges, which is the nature of life. But you have always been a person, you do stand in your integrity. And let's go back a minute, because you are no stranger to rock and roll. I mean, I'm trying to think of how old you were when you were in the first band here.
I think the band started at 16, you know, but it really started at 6 years old, 1976, at the convention center. My dad took me to see Santana. And I remember that moment being, this is what I want to do, Dad. You know, this is what I want to be. And my dad always was a big time in rock and roll.
Yep.
You know, of course, your voice on I think it was a KLMP in the early years.
I was.
Yeah, right. So your voice on the airs and sitting at my, you know, stereo system and listening to radio. And radio was a whole different animal back then. And,
yes,
and like,
it was.
You know, your personality, the DJ's personalities were a huge part of that relationship. And KLMP was my jam, baby. I listened to all that rock and roll, you know, and it influenced me. But my dad was a big part of that. He doesn't play, but he's a huge consumer of music, and he has the dream of rock star dreams. So I grew up watching this guy air guitar, and he had a trumpet, and he would try to play trumpet along with Chicago, and he would play air guitar with Santana, and, you know, just great music. My next concert was Journey, you know, and that was another one that influenced me, and you know, I just was always around it. And thank you for the work you did back in the 80s. And it really shaped the kind of artist that I am today. So you're part of that, you know?
Well, you know, we always in Vegas had a rich musical vein. Like I said, because of the parents of the kids who grew up here, a lot of them were musicians on the strip and so on and so forth. But we were no stranger to people like Mark Slaughter, who started when he was in high school. We had a lot of... We were surrounded by it, and so being in a rock band, it was more the norm than not the norm. There was a rich musical vein here that I recall, especially in the 80s. We had so many clubs, and it was such a great time for music here and locally. And then you went on, you've done quite a few tours.
Yeah, I was in cover bands in Vegas, and my cover bands were really more in the 90s, you know, like in the 80s, I was still a little young. I did play before I turned 20. I did a couple of bar gigs, but you know, you had to be shuffled out the back door kind of a thing. But it got real for me in the 90s, and we put out an album in 96. And then you were actually in the studio with me in 98 or so, and Tom Fletcher produced it. And,
yes.
And I remember tracking a guitar solo with you in the control room. And,
That's right.
When I haven't heard that music in a long time, but when I do from time to time listen to it, I think of you as I'm listening to the guitar solo that we recorded, because you were right there next to me while I was doing it. And I toured. We got on the VH1 Rock Across America tour, which we opened for some incredible bands. Cheap Trick, Edwin McCain. I mean, there's a long list there. And then I got on that tour with Great White in 2003, and that's when that fire happened, and that was a tragic derailment of the momentum that we had created, and horrible loss of life, and the downward spiral. And then I toured with Live, and I toured with Peter Murphy. Peter Murphy took me over to Europe, and I opened for him by myself with an acoustic guitar, which was a very scary thing to go do, but it turned out to be an amazing experience. And, you know, just all over the country, and it's just been, I don't know another business like this, you know? It's there's so much fun in it, and I've had a blast. I'm so grateful.
Well, you were clear when you had the first vision, and you followed true to that. And another thing is, every time a fear would come up, well, I don't know if I could do this, you powered through it, which is, again, the nature of a creative spirit and a visionary. And you've branched out, even the project that you did with Miles.
Yeah.
And Neil Sean's kid. You've done so many different things, which is going to make me go back to ask you this question. Because you're somebody who's always reinventing yourself, let's go back to this October 19th, 10th anniversary show at Aliante. Is it some sort of, we're going to put this in the closet for a while and you're going to do something else? You have something else up your sleeve that I might want to know about?
Well, part of it for me is that 10 years seems like a nice way to cap something. I don't want to definitively say that we're not going to perform anymore. You know, we have a second album that's in the can. It needs some touch up, and I see us releasing that, finishing that. We need to retrack all the drums because when we recorded the demo versions, they're all V drums, and I need to put real drums on them. But that's a little project that I'd like to do in 2025 and get that released. Those are songs, of course, we've been playing because it's part of the show that we do, but we've never released them, and there's no recordings of them, and that's part of it. I think that we'll continue to service corporate work because corporate, you know, there's money in it to be made, and we need to make money, so that's good. The climate has changed in Las Vegas with shows, and it's been really challenging. And to get into that game of the tourist market, you know, you really need millions of dollars behind it to break into that, and we just don't have it, so... Doing smaller ticketed shows, while it's joyful for me, it's a lot of work. Sometimes there's no return on those shows. And so I think I've gotten to the point where I just need to make good choices and follow the joy, you know. I want to focus on writing and recording more original music, maybe working on TV and film placement stuff. But I have another thing that's been kind of scratching at me. And that's that writing a book. For years,
really?
I've heard people, oh, you should write a book,
Yes.
And I don't know if it'll ever amount to anything. That's not the point. It's about the journey, right? So just sitting down and doing it for the cathartic value and putting these stories down in black and white. And then if it leads to something that's publishable, you know, or is worthy of that, then great. Maybe I'll go that route. But that sounds very romantic to me. It just kind of cut out, you know, all the obligations that come with doing shows. You've got all this press stuff you got to do. You got to go to a lot of events. And you get to, but it's time consuming. And I sort of want to turn inward, and I want to go back and focus on meditation and my temple, right? Get my physical body really in the best shape that it can be, and just not have all that external pressure and trying to keep up with everything. And so I don't know for sure, but it feels like that could be the last public show that we do, ticketed show here in Las Vegas. So I don't know. I don't know. More will be revealed, right?
What you just said to me, really, I have a resonance with that. When I get chills, I because I do know a lot of bits and pieces of your story, of your journey, and plus even the backstory of you being raised here is quite, it would make a great read. It would be an incredible book, Michael. It really would.
Because it's too bad I can't write, you know. I got to figure that piece out. But other than that, it's great in concept.
Well, you can always, you know, there's ghostwriters. There's ways to do that. You just get a little voice recorder and pop things in there and try and make. I've been asked to do that several times. And several times I've sat down to organize chapters. A friend of mine said, who is a prolific writer, said, you're trying to do the whole thing in your mind and you get overwhelmed, which every time I went down, I got overwhelmed. So she said, what you want to do is take a page and just put, like a chapter, like one story, and get those out so that you're not trying to go, well, where do I start? Put all of these ideas when they come into your head, and each one can be a chapter, and then you just take one thing at a time. And it's a lot. I mean, I got years on you.
Oh, and the stories that you have and your life experience is unimaginable. And like, so it's easy to get overwhelmed with that. And I think that's great advice. And that's what my point about, don't focus on the outcome. Don't try to achieve something. Just do it. You know, we have this little podcast that Kevin Sucre from the Doc
Center. Oh, I wanted to mention that. Little Lavender.
Yeah, we don't do that for any reason other than that we just like to hang and chop it up. And it's not to grow a podcast or have fame or be successful or sponsors or whatever. We do it because we just like the hang. And when it comes to a feat like what you're talking about, ambition, or writing a book, just do it because of the journey of getting that chapter done or the one sentence or one idea. And it doesn't have to be written and see, like you sound like a genius. Just write. Don't get in the way. Don't censor. And I think that applies to a lot of things in life. We get paralysis by analysis. We think.
Oh, my gosh.
Stop thinking. Just do. And it doesn't have to be perfect. It's progress, not perfection.
Well, I always find that when the flow hits you, it's easy, effortless, harmonious.
Yeah.
And that's when I can accomplish a lot. And what I have learned, it's taken me a long time, if I'm sitting down and I'm forcing it, no, this is not the time to do this or that. I apply it with everything in my life, whether it's reorganizing the closet. I'll go in there and that voice will go, oh, I love this shirt. And I go, no, you haven't worn that in a million years. Let's let somebody else who's, no, but I'm going to wear it. Oh, you're going to wear it now. I go, you know what? I'm closing the door on this. This is not the time to do it. But sometimes when you're in the flow, it happens almost without you. You're just being on automatic pilot and you're being driven. That's the creative flow, which, or in your case, because you are such a visionary like you did with Reckless in Vegas, the whole thing came through, whether in a dream or a meditation. When it comes through, then you already know that, well, this is already done. I just gotta let it come through me. But I want to go back to a little lavender. It is fun. It is so organic. It's on Tuesdays at 5:30.
It's stupid.
I got to tell you. Michael, I got to tell you, I did an internet TV show a couple weeks ago, right? So I was the last guest. The one before me I walked in on that they were finishing up was Murray Sawchuk was the guest.
Oh, yeah.
So Murray gets done, and I tell you, I couldn't look at him without thinking of you, you and your the paintbrush, you doing your Murray Sawchuk impression. So I told him that. It's endearing, Murray.
He's on every episode, that guy. You
he's
know?
On every episode. It's hilarious.
Yeah, we had him on as a guest, too. And I like Murray a lot, and he's a great magician. He's learned how to, he understands the business of show business, and he's had a great career. He's a good friend. We smoke cigars from time to time. And he didn't know that I do that bit on the little lavender. He doesn't know, you know, and we think that's the funny part about
well,
it.
He
you
knows
know?
Now. All, I don't think he got it, but I was saying I can't. I mentioned it in passing, but I didn't go into detail, right?
Yeah, he probably did. He probably went over his head, which is, he's got that high hair. It's hard to get over his head, you know?
Yeah. Well, a little lavender is, again, it's so simple in life if we just follow our joy. And when it isn't fun anymore, then you guys won't do it. But you are it's really fun to watch. There's great chemistry between you guys. And I was wondering if there was, well, when we get to 100 podcasts, I think you guys said that one time, then we're done. But you
I said 88. He says 100, but now he's mad at me for I'm only good for 88 episodes. Well, it's just a number I have in my head, but 100 is the goal.
It's a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot. You know, it's every week. It's kind of a fun commitment, and you can do it from your home studio. And it's he wants to move it to a professional space, you know. And John Orlando, do you know Tony Orlando's son?
Of course. I guess I don't know him as well as you do, but I know of him. Yes.
He's got a podcast studio, and he's offered it to us, and I'm kind of like, oh, but then I got to drive across. You were talking about, before we got on the air, you were talking about the traffic here, you know? That's a good test of your spirituality, by the way. You seem pretty calm about it. It freaks me out, and I get so frustrated, so I'm not spiritually fit enough to have to drive across town every Tuesday at 4 o'clock to get there for the 5 o'clock, and I don't know. I don't know where that will go, but it's been offered to us to take it to the next level. But I'm also afraid that if you take it to the next level, does it become more business and structured? And I sort of do it for an outlet that's loose and easy, and I don't really want it to turn into anything that's more structured. So I got some decisions to make around that too. I love Kevin, and he's a blast. You know, his show is incredible. The people get an opportunity to go see the Doc Sutters play. They play at the Venetian about twice. They're twice a week, and it's pretty much every week. But you know, as far as our podcast goes, who knows? You know, what started that was Bob Ross. Did you watch Bob Ross growing up?
Of course, I did, and I caught, I think, the very first episode of A Little Lavender, and I caught that because I did not know all these years that you are such a fan of his. And a painter, and what a great release artistically that is. I love that very first show.
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a painter, but I do it for fun. Again, so painting for me is not about the outcome. It's about the journey and the moment of it. And the second my head gets into like, oh, that doesn't look right or whatever, now I've lost it. I want to be in and not thinking about that type of thing and perfection. And Bob Ross was just so... Oh. A little happy tree here, and I think a good little, and so that's part of it. And also a little lavender, meaning that, you know, as men, and there's a lot of masculine, macho masculinity around, and Like, I'm a feely guy and sensitive, and Kevin and I have that in common. And so we wanted to use it as like, hey, here's two, you know, accomplished guys who aren't afraid to talk about feelings and sensitivity and vulnerability and authenticity. And that was part of the premise of what a little lavender is. We all have a little lavender in us guys, you know, lighten up a little bit, you know, and women possess this quality in abundance. And it's such a beautiful quality. You see two guys going to a bar, drinking beers, watching a football game. You see two women that are having they're going and having lunch, and the conversations between the two. I think masculine men, you don't lose your masculinity by being sensitive and having deep talks. You know, women are so beautiful with that, and I think men have a lot to learn from that. You know.
Well, this is the time on the planet where we're coming into the divine feminine, the divine masculine balance spiritually. And that's what we're coming into, and the balance of these energies where you're seeing a lot more males that are tuned into, let's say, their inner spirituality, tuned into their heart consciousness. They're coming out like you and Kevin. And that's why I love the show, because you're at home, your beautiful home, which I know the vibe from your home. And while I don't know Kevin well, the whole vibe of the show is special. Like you said, I don't know that it would transfer when you got to go across town, be in a studio, and now, what?
I really want to focus now at joyfulness. You know, the charity component that I've created with Reckless in Vegas, and that's the Reckless in Vegas NEF Collective, has been such an impactful, joyful part of what we do. You know, we get local businesses to sponsor a show or a month at a time, and it's connecting local businesses with our local community in support of local charities. And that's joyful work for me. That ambition, it's so esteemable, and it just lights me up. Working with kids lights me up. You know, sharing that experience with kids and seeing them take that and move their dreams forward is so, so amazing. That's where I can see myself in more of a structured situation. When it comes to art and this podcast we're talking about, I just want it to be joyful, and it's got to be an outlet of peace for me, because my head is crazy, Lark. You know, it's kind of like when you talked about going in the closet. Oh, I'll get rid of that. No, we're going to wear that. I'm going to wear that sometime. That chitter chatter that happens. And I look for things that take me out of that, you know, and I that's the goal for me moving forward. And I know you relate to all that.
I totally do, because I have finally come to a place in my life, and it's so freeing, Michael.
Yeah.
Where if every day I said, what is going to bring me joy? I've always loved radio. It's my first love. And even though it's changed dramatically over the years, the way it is, I always said, the moment that I dread going into the studio, I won't do it anymore. And I took, after Kevin died, I took an 11-year hiatus. I had a dark night of the soul that lasted 10 years. But I love being back on the air, and I love it. And every day I wake up and go, well, where is the lineup for the flow of my joy? And just to be able to do that and make that a practice, then, and even though, like on the way here, two accidents and traffic and this and that, no matter what goes on prior to me, when I get in the studio, I just zen. I come right back to zen, and it has that effect on me. So I applaud you that you do embrace that, you do follow, and you do have a sense of inner clock timing on when, you know, I'm complete with this project for now, and you have no problem. You are such a great, clear communicator about, well, I'm done with this right now, whatever it is. I've seen you do that. And you are so surrounded by such artistic friends in that community and that kind of energy. But
staying open-minded, right? Not being rigid about a decision. And not everybody also has the luxury that their work is something that's joyful anyway. They're doing it for a means to an end, and hopefully in their downtime that they've created they've postured themselves for self-care and for joyful stuff, things that they love to do with their family and their friends, and that's key. It's a key component to have the balance in that. We love our craft. You love what you do. I love what I do. Not everybody gets that blessing.
I understand that. And that's where it's so important to slow down and have the, and like you said, find the self-care and find the balance. You know, I can't even put into words how much I love you, Mr. Michael.
I love you too, Lark.
and your pop, Mr. Lenny, your whole family, and the journey that I've seen you go through and the growth that you and the wisdom and all that you have gained. And I'm so excited about this upcoming show, October 19th. This is the 10th anniversary show for Reckless in Vegas. I'm not going to say it's the last one, but I would say if you've not seen it or if you've seen it before, this is going to be a magical night. And I do love the component of how much money over the years that you've been doing this, you have given back. It's just a beautiful part of who you are, and you would never not do it any other way. So where can we get tickets, and what do we do?
So you can go to Aliante, their website will take you to Ticketmaster. They're on Ticketmaster's website under Reckless in Vegas. Or you can go to our website, which is recklessinvegas.com, and that will take you to Ticketmaster. So.
And there is capacity on that showroom, so don't wait till the last minute. October 19th is right around the corner. In the meantime, be sure to check out A Little Lavender. It's on Tuesdays. It's up on the Facebook page. It's up on where we find podcasts and all that fun stuff. And I send you waves and waves of love to you, your family, your four-leggeds.
I'm and surrounded by them right now.
I love them so much. And thank you for taking the time to spend with us today. Michael Shapiro, the one and only Reckless in Vegas. Again, October 19th, Aliante Station.
Thanks a lot.